So we're at Supernova Perth 2016, and we're talking to John Noble. Hello, sir.
How are you doing?
And you're not sure if you can function on this side.
I'm sitting on the other side, and so I'm not sure. Yeah. I'll try. I'll be good.
You reckon we can do it?
Yeah.
Think of it as the alternate universe.
Oh, God, I needed that. Now I've got it. Yeah, fine. I'm really confident now.
Cool. Let's start with Fringe. It had that really strong themes of parallel universes and alternate histories. Did you ever get confused while making it?
No, not really. But it's also, that theme, which kind of seemed kind of strange and fresh, is something that I think about all the time and always have. Mm-hmm. And I do study science, so I was conscious of the potentials that existed scientifically, which have since been supported entirely, sure, of parallel universes. I was never confused. It was because in the case of my character, in the sliding doors situation, at a certain point in his life, it took him in one direction, it took him in another when he was a young man. And so I would go back to that point in my mind and then just go from. The basic character was the same, exactly the same, but he'd been taken into, he'd gone through different doors. So no, I didn't, I understood it.
But you didn't, did you ever have a moment where you weren't sure which Walter you had to play that day?
I haven't played both. No, more confusing for me was some of the subtle changes in Walter himself. There were, someone counted up something like 14 or 17 different subtle changes, depending on things that had happened to Walter at given times. And the one I remember was the hardest, was I think it was the beginning of season 4, where Walter had to function as if there was no Peter in his life. And that was very difficult, because that was the reason that Walter was there in the first place, and the reason he functioned as he did. And that was really challenging. And so I decided, what the hell am I going to do? So I decided to make him a bit OCDC and miserable as hell. But in the OCDC, there's a certain mannerisms you have to follow. And so I'd say to the cameraman, hey, listen, just keep an eye on me, mate, because I really don't want to be walking. Everything's in straight lines and very neat. So if I slip out of it, just tell me. And so I had this liaison go with my camera operators to let me know if that happened. That was the only time I can ever remember it, though. Working with bits of brains and not with bits of brains and all that was just, that was fine.
Well, it sounds like the character from the outset must have been a real acting challenge, but then you get this extra layer added to it. Mm. Was he a challenge to begin with, just as the normal Walter?
It was a joyful challenge, huh? After I'd got the role, then I did a lot of research on all aspects of that type of character. And so I kind of understood, I pretty well understood everything that was going on, including the science. And I had a deal going with the writers, and I'd say to them, look, I'll do anything. Seriously, I'll do anything as long as it's not bad science. If it's something that it just doesn't make sense, it's got a year 10 kid wouldn't do this, then please don't give it to me. If it's feasible within theoretical physics, if it's feasible, no problem. But if it's not, I'll have real trouble. That's a good understanding. So generally, beyond a few things in the first season, everything we did and talked about was feasible in theoretical physics. Mm.
I'll have to take your word for it. I don't know science. Now, you've gone from one mad scientist role to a very different mad scientist role, playing one of Batman's great enemies, the Scarecrow. Do you see Walter and Scarecrow having any common ground?
I think they'd get on fine. I think Walter would like Scarecrow. I think he'd understand him. And Scarecrow would probably have a soft spot for Walter as well. He'd be good allies.
Yeah, I want to see that now.
I think most of the characters I played get on with him too. That'd be a very interesting enclave of crazy guys working together.
Yeah, could they accomplish anything though?
Certainly. They might have a few leadership issues, I think. I don't think any of them would like to be followers. They'd all like to be leaders. It'd be a strange democracy. Maybe they'd just drug all the rest of them to get their way. That's what Walter would do anyway. They'd just drag them up, mate. Put in the gas, the toxic gas, or shoot them up with some LSD. There'd be no problems.
This would be the greatest film ever made.
It would be great. Yeah, we could throw in Henry from Sleepy Hollow and even Morlan from the lady show I'm doing and put them all in together.
Dose them up. Let them go.
Drug of choice.
Yeah.
So that'd be the way to go. I think. Excellent. I can see this happening.
Scarecrow was a voice performance role. How do you go about creating a voice for a character who's so well-defined like that?
Doing voice work is interesting in the sense that I will... It's not as much preparation as people think. I'll go in with an idea, and I'll maybe present a couple of voice ideas to them, and they'll say, oh, yeah, that second one's really good. Let's just... With something as big as Scarecrow, they would then be sent across to London for the producers to listen to. It was quite often... Well, I was shooting in Warner Brothers in... doing the recording Warner Brothers in Los Angeles. But there was a link up, and they'd listen in, and they'd say, yeah, that's good. And ultimately, rather quickly, we'd come up with a voice that would suit that character. And then during the course of, I think, it was 18 months or 2 years, we were going back in all the time to do different bits. Well, it was a long time, because... from the beginning of development, when I came in to do my first bits, to the final, when we finally put a lid on it, and even then, the developers were still wanting to do more, and one of them said, stop, you've got to stop, please, let us release this. But they'd just play back what I'd done before, and go, I got you, and then we'd move on from there. And you work an awful lot with guidance, in that situation, specific guidance from your director or producer on the other side of the fence. And that's, I'm quite happy with that with voice work. I don't get at all precious about getting a line reading, whereas actors, oh, don't give me a line reading. Give me a line reading, I'm happy with that. And then it's just hard work. You just go into the studio for maybe as much as 6 hours a day, which is really heavy on the voice.
Yeah.
And my pattern is a very simple one. They call them a line, it might be a paragraph, it might be whatever, let's get a line 72. And then I just do... I'll do a little read through for myself. Then I just do that three times back to back. No breaks, just three times back to back. And then at the end of that, there'll be enough variation then, almost always, for them to say, got it. Mm-hmm. Or if they say, no, we actually want you to do that, then you go back three times again. So it's a very efficient operation, ultimately. It's not directed line to line as much as you may think.
Yeah, efficient over 2 years.
Well, off and on. I mean, you know, I'd go and then I'd come back 6 months later and then do that sort of thing. But I think once you developed a pattern of working and as professional voice artists, you do that, as you probably know, talking to voice artists, then it's kind of it's like a routine. It's not as edgy. You're not panicked every line about the director giving you lines. You just go ahead and do it, and you own the character. You own the character, and provided you don't lose your articulation or stuff it up somehow. And that happens sometimes, you know.
Yeah. Talking for that long.
But even so, that doesn't worry. If you hit a point where you missed a line, you just don't even think about it. Just go back and do it again, because it's all digital now. There's nobody wasting tape on it, so it's kind of relaxed once you know what you're doing.
Looking back a bit to before Walter, I think one of your best known roles is Denethor in Lord of the Rings. Denethor and Walter are both very extreme personalities in different ways. But how do you create a character who's that extreme without making them cartoonish?
Mm-hmm. Well, you see, I don't set out to create any type of character. I look at basically what I'm given. What I know, what I work out about this particular animal that I'm playing, and then it becomes a matter of truths. It's not a matter of I need to be this sort of character at all. I don't ever play that. I would never try to be funny. I mean, that's disastrous. Just do what the character does. If you do what the character does, and follow his impulses, not yours, his impulses, then you might turn out to be a villain. You might turn out to be very funny, but you're not trying to be either. You can't, I think it's a big mistake to go and play, I am playing the villain, unless you're doing a melodrama, which we don't do melodramas anymore.
No, that's a shame.
It'd be fun, yeah.
Yeah, Denethor could have been in a melodrama.
No, he was a very sad, he was a very considered character, very difficult character. But I mean, I did understand everything about him as to why he got where he was, which does require quite a bit of research, quite a bit of understanding of the human psyche, the human condition,
Cherry tomatoes.
Yeah, well, that's probably the hardest part. It was a wonderful accident, actually. Peter Jackson was watching me do my rehearsals by myself. And normally in these situations, with the multiple takes, one of the actor's job was to have continuity, you know. Yeah. So I'm sitting there and just thinking, okay, now on this field, I'm going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I knew exactly I could repeat it. The timing was perfect. And at one stage, Jackson must have been watching through one of the bank of monitors, and he saw me squirt something out of the side of my mouth. He got terribly excited. He ran on the set. He said, "Mate, what you just did then?" I said, "What was that, mate?" He said, "Squirted up. Can you do that?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Can you make it?" I said, "Yes." And he looked at me, he got terribly excited and waddled away again. And so that's how that actually came about, was watching me rehearse to try to get my continuity right.
Cool. It became such a defining image for
that. Defining image, yeah. And I mean, the eating itself was that of an obsessive man. An obsessive man who was at a very low point in his life. I mean, he just basically sent his son off to a certain death, bear in mind he's about to. Well, we won't go into the psychology of all of that, but incredibly obsessive. You would have to eat that way to be in the state he was, frankly. Always by himself, always obsessive. And that was obsessive eating. And that's sort of how it came about. Again, if you look at where the character will be at that point, then that makes sense. That's what you do. And that's what he did. Mm.
That's brilliant. That's a really good insight. Now, we've spoken about Walter and Scarecrow and Denethor, very well-known roles. Do you have a role or a part that you wish people were more aware of?
Look, I generally get to play fairly interesting characters. For those that happen to catch them, I did some on The Good Wife, and I've just done a year on Elementary and... The first season of Sleepy Hollow I liked a lot, working on that. Lots of stuff, 24 over the years. And eons of stage, masses of stage work, which no one will ever see. And some of those I have very special memories of. But no, they're probably the only one was something I did. I did a kid show television series where I played Blackheart the Pirate. That was the best fun I ever had in my life, Blackheart. Which filmed it in Fiji with my mate Dougal. And it was hilarious, but it disappeared somewhere or other. Oh, God, I love doing that. Oh, black eye. Hated children. He hates children, this fella. And a white eye and a long fingernail and a dirty old bugger he was.
Yeah, that just sounds like fun.
It was such fun. Yeah, it was great. That I still remember that with great affection, doing that role. The kids do it.
Sounds like you've had a very exciting career.
Already. I have. I've been lucky. I've been lucky as hell. I don't know if there's been some down spots, but not too many. No, I've just been lucky. I've got some great roles.
Excellent. Well, look, thanks for coming down to Perth. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Pleasure.
It's been an absolute thrill.
Thank you so much. Lovely to be here.
Cool. Thanks, John.